Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with Corey. I'm your host, Corey Smith, and I'm here with a special guest this episode. We'll be talking some football. We'll be talking NC State. We'll be talking behind the scenes with Mr. Jeff Gravely. Jeff, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, my man. I got my Java. I'm ready to rock and roll. It's game week. I'm tired of the preseason. Probably not like the players are, but it's time to play some football.
We're less than 48 hours away. I mean, we're talking about game week. We're less than 48 hours away from game day in week zero for NC State. It's wild to think of. It's been a long time coming, but I wanted to ask you, a new role for you this year, as some people have already reported. I don't know how it got out there exactly, but you will be on the sidelines this year, taking over the role that Tony Haynes had for so long for NC State. Just, what led to that and what made you want to take on that role as well?
Well, I've always enjoyed football from the vantage point of a sideline. I mean, that's where I started as a player, and that's where I spent the bulk of my time as a photographer and a reporter. I love seeing the game from the sideline. It's a different game. I mean, we all sit up in the press box or in the stands looking at the all 22 and can't figure out why in the world the quarterback didn't see this person and drop coverage. Well, when you see the same – when you see the same thing from field level, it's different. And that's one of the things that I hope I can bring to our listeners is what the vantage point, what was seen, what was heard, and what was felt. Those are the three things that I'm looking to do, and provide some insight to some things that are going on, why they're doing this, why they're doing that. But I just love the game of football from the field level because it is an entirely different beast. I understand how players can miss some things. I understand how officials can miss certain things because all it takes is one player to run right in front of your field of vision right at that exact second, and you don't see what a lot of people saw sitting in the stands or the press box.
I was going to say, I think that's kind of why I think it's only the CW that's been doing it so far, but the ref cam that they have, where they actually have them wearing the Ray-Bans with the glasses on it or the camera on it. And you can see like how quickly, a running back can run across to get, to go for a block and you miss somebody getting a face mask there. And it changes things completely. But that kind of brings me to what's the biggest differences that you're noticing so far? I'm sure you guys have maybe done some kind of test runs on the sidelines and trying to, whether it was during fall camp or what have you, but what have been some of the biggest differences that you've noticed needing to not only be on the sidelines, but also report back up and make sure people are getting an idea of what's going on if they can't see the game?
Yeah, we actually did a trial run for about an hour during the second scrimmage that they had at Carter-Finley, and I was all rigged up, and I made sure I went to Coach Dorn, and I said, Coach, we are not broadcasting this on the radio. This is just my scrimmage, my opportunity to get connected, to hear Chaz in my ear, to hear our engineer, to contact him when they want to come down to me on the field. And I've also leaned heavily on Tony Haynes. I think he's one of the best analyst sideline reporters that you could want. And he's smart. He's descriptive. He knows what he's talking about. And so I've leaned on him heavily about some of the intricacies of how he did this, what do you need to know as you try to get Dave Dorn at halftime? Well, there's a system to that. And so he told me the system of how it works and how it plays out in post game. So those are things that, I'll have to learn kind of on the fly, so to speak. But Tony's been a great sounding board for me to talk about strategy, how many hits he would have during a game, what he can report, what he can't report. Because really, look, our job is to help promote the program. Mm-hmm. And it is not to criticize the program, although there will be some criticism, honest criticism, but also it's our job to also protect the program in, as far as information that everybody would love to know right now going into this first game, because every team in America has multiple questions because of roster overturns, because of the transfer portal, because of incoming freshmen, who's going to play. Well, our job is to protect that information until people actually see it on game day. So that's what Chaz and I, that if Coach Dorn talks about it, Chaz and I will talk about it in a podcast, on the radio show or whatever. So that's kind of the up up top view of what our goal is and what my goal is moving forward is moving onto the sidelines.
Well, I'll go ahead and mark off all my roster quit. No, I'm just kidding.
yeah. CJ Bailey will start at quarterback. I'll give you some scoop.
What? That yeah. is wild.
It was a tough competition. And yeah.
It only I will took say this. To get there, right?
Yeah. I will say this. Everybody's wondered about Will Wilson's ability to throw the football. We have seen a different passing quarterback in Will Wilson. I know you guys got to come to one of the open media practices, and that was one of the areas that a lot of people were looking at. I want to see Will Wilson throw the football. Well, he is throwing the football.
Yeah, he looked a little bit different in that. And again, everything we've heard from behind the scenes, he's progressed a lot in that area. And I think it's kind of a realization of like you're pretty close to a potential competition for him next year. So it's reality now at this point. I did want to ask you too, though, because you've gotten a chance to talk to Dave throughout the offseason behind the scenes and, you know, follow along with him. And again, like you said, being on the sidelines, being able to communicate with him there, but also through the radio shows and through different things that you guys have done throughout the offseason. It feels like we're only seeing a little bit, but it feels like a different confidence that he has about this team. And it feels like he's more outward about it at the very least. You know, there's been some teams where I'm sure he's been confident. I go back to the 2017 and 2018 teams and he knew what he had, but he wasn't as outward about it. Do you sense a different confidence from him this offseason? And what have you seen from him that's maybe a little bit different than what we've seen in the past?
I think it's similar to what he felt last year going into the season. I think this year there's a comfort level with what he has. There's a confidence level in what he has. He absolutely loves the leadership that's shown on both sides of the ball. He loves how it's not all coach driven. Some of the leadership things, it's your responsibility. A collective responsibility is a very powerful thing when you're talking about a team. When a coach doesn't have to tell a player something, a player tells a player something. I brought this up on the radio show this week. I was at practice one day, and there was a player that came off, and he took a knee. Immediately, another player walked up and said, "Are you sick? Are you sick?" He goes, "No." He goes, "Well, stand up. We don't take a knee over here. We don't do that." That's the kind of leadership. That's the kind of teaching that you want. You want your players to be the ones to deliver the message sometimes, because those are the ones that resonate a little bit more with players, as opposed to hearing a coach say the same thing all the time. Coach can tell you something. After a while, some players will tune it out. When a player, a teammate says something to you, it has a different tone to it. And I just thought that was a perfect example of what Coach Dorn wants in his program. He wants collective responsibility from all of his players. He wants good football players. He wants really good guys away from the field, and I think that's what he's seen. He's very comfortable with the roster that he has. He's certainly comfortable with the coaching staff he has, and I think that's a reason why we've seen Coach Dorn. I don't know. He's always been confident because he said, look, I don't expect to lose games. Do you think I'm going to say we're going to lose all of our games? No.
You love my question. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He's always been confident, but I think there is a comfort level that he has going into last season and certainly going into this season.
And just so we were clear, because I did have somebody reach out to me and say, well, you know, you sounded like you were condescending on that question. Like, you, why did you ask it that way? And I was like, no, I'm asking that simply that way because I'm asking Dave, like, we haven't been able to see the same things that you've seen. What actually makes you believe that this is the team that can get there? So I want to be clear on that question. It was sort of like, hey, you know, tell us what you're seeing that makes you confident that you can get there. But yeah, I mean, again, and that's one of the things that he talked about too, was, you know, there's been a few teams in the past, and I'm not trying to call out any specific teams, but like, I think back to that 2024 team that team was able to turn things around and able to get, or actually I think it was 2023, the last year that Peyton Wilson was on the team.
Yep.
And he was extremely vocal, and, you know, they talked about the fact that, hey man, you know, we there's been teams where I've only had one true alpha, only had one guy that I felt like would step up in a room and take leadership. He's got, you know, multiple on both sides of the ball this year. And I did want to ask you, I mean, what have you seen from, you know, some of those leaders to step up in those roles? You talked about one specific guy, but like, we saw not only, you know, the captains for NC State named, but now assistant captains for the first time ever as well.
You know, you look at some of the names that are captains or assistant captains, you're like, oh, there's Popo Aguirre as a captain. Yeah. That should tell you right there, right off the bat, how he's been received. He didn't walk in here and said, yeah, I came from the U. I'm the best in the world. He came in and said, how can I help? Mm-hmm. And there's an immediate sense. You just watch him in a huddle. You watch him on the sidelines. You watch him in scrimmage and practices. Just a natural born leader. The same thing goes for a guy we saw a little bit last year, and I'm really excited to see this year, is linebacker A.J. Richardson. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he got injured last year. We saw him play a couple of games, tried to come back at the end of the year, and was re-injured again. But for a guy like him to be named a captain is a huge thing. So I think those are the kind of things that you look for. And the whole concept of why do you have assistant captains? And it stems from his relationship and working with Mike Irwin, who's mm-hmm. a former graduated from Army, served twice in the overseas in combat. And he has not only taken a responsibility with the football team this year, but he's always talked to different teams on campus. But he has really done a deep dive into football. And he's like, look, this is a lot like a hockey situation, a lot like a military operation, in that you've got your captains. I think you can have assistant captains, and it kind of, particularly in a year when Dave really trusts his leadership on both sides of the ball, we've seen that in who's been named captain and who's been named assistant captain. And it also doesn't mean that you can't be a leader if you don't have that title.
Yeah.
And that's the other part that I think that some of the other guys have earned, that you'll see leadership, whether they have the captainship or assistant captainship or not.
Hey, Tiffany Stratton here from the WWE SmackDown. Tiffy time can be crazy, y'all, and when I get a break, that means it's Chumba time. Chumba Casino has hundreds of online social games and new titles landing every week. There's always something fresh to try, and the daily boosts make Chumba even more fun. They're little epiphanies that make my day sparkle. Ready for a fun way to switch off and take some time for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Best thing that's ever happened to you financially. Go.
Easy. Sold my car on Carvana. Amazing offer.
Really? I hit 200 on the scratcher.
Did the scratcher come to your house and hand you a check?
No.
How many scratchers did you hit to get that? I hit a button on Carvana.com once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's like the lottery, except you always win.
Not like the lottery at all, actually.
Exactly. Inexplicably good. Offers worth bragging about. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt line drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $250 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it is very much a hockey style. And you know, it's interesting because that's what led to the Carolina Hurricanes winning the Stanley Cup this year, was maybe not having the best individual players. You didn't have any players that everybody's like, oh, is a top 25, you know, wing or a top 25 center or anything along those lines. But they had the most complete team, and that's ultimately what led to them making that deep run. And I want to ask you about, you know, every sports reporter's favorite topic, themselves, because you've been in this industry. I mean, you were with WREL for 31 out of your 35 years that you were in the sports reporting world. How much did that help prepare you for, you know, taking on this role and being in this position now at this point, knowing, you know, not only the intricacies of being a student athlete at NC State, because you're a walk-on pitcher as well, but also, you know, being able to take on this role from that vantage point too?
I understand where they're coming from. And I think that's one of the things when I was an anchor and reporter at REL and we would interview somebody for a job, I would ask them, have you ever played sports? And I talked, if I speak to a student on campus now who's interested in communications, I asked them, have you ever played sports? It's not to see how good they were. Do you understand the concept of it's not all about you? It's mm-hmm. about the group. It's about the success of the group and not the success of the individual. And I've kind of always felt that way. I feel like I'm pretty good at a lot of things, but I'm not great at one thing or two things. And it was the same way as my athletic career. So I've taken that mindset and carried it over into my career. And I carried it over into the transition from a WREL to NC State. It was a position that Boo kind of created back in 2020. And he's like, yeah, because my question was, who's helping tell the story of NC State athletics? And that was my pitch mm-hmm. to Boo and Fred Demarest and Stephanie Minio and Kyle Winchester. I said, who's helping to tell the story? I can do that. I want to be the person that can help tell the story. I want to be able to do as multiple things as you need me to do, whether you need me to do video features, whether you need me to host events, whether you need me to be on coaches shows, whether you need me to do whatever you need. And I think that's one of the things that we've kind of expanded on. And so, you know, being able to do that, I understand where these players have come from. I love to tell the story. You mentioned I was a walk-on pitcher, and there was one time Coach Avent said, man, you don't need to say that. Just tell them you played at NC State. Well, I said, well, no, Coach. I want people to know that I was a walk-on and I never played, but I also didn't quit the team. I also enjoyed every moment of being able to get the opportunity to suit up in Reynolds Coliseum and drive all the way over to Doak to practice or whatever. I wanted people to know that. I wanted people to know when I was in high school, my junior year, I was a quarterback of an 0-10 football team. That ain't easy. That's not easy. So I understand where these players are coming from, where these coaches are coming from. And I've always had an empathy and a compassion for where they are as far as the season, after an injury, after a tough game, after an exhilarating game. I kind of understand where they are. And that's helped shape some of the questions that I ask and certainly how I treat people, because this is a relationship. This is a relationship business, what we're in, whether it's the media, where it's you're trying to build a trust and a like with the people that you deal with, whether it's players, whether it's coaches. And that's been my mantra since I started my career back in 1985.
And going back to 1985, obviously that was.
Were you born then?
I was not. I'm sorry. I was barely even a thought at that point. It was 4 years later when I was born. So, yeah, but I, you know, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to leave that one out. But I did want to ask you, I mean, how much did your time at NC State shape you and you know, give you that understanding of what you wanted to do? Because, you know, you're watching, obviously you mentioned you're on the baseball team and you're, you know, being coached by Sam Esposito. But at the same time, you know, the basketball team is doing what they did, making the 1983 run. And then obviously, I believe 1985 was a pretty good year, too. 1984, not so much.
Right.
You know, nobody likes before I bring that up. But, right. You know, those 2 years, I mean, how much did that kind of help shape you and give you the idea? Like, this is I want to cover stuff like this. I want to be a part of things like this, too.
Yeah, I mean, to go through the run of 1983 as a student was incredible. And you got to feel what it was like to be there. And so I was always glued to WREL's coverage of the 83 team anytime they would do something. I'd watch Tom Suter and Bob Holliday and Jay Jennings. What were they doing? Mm-hmm. And that kind of gave me the bug. I'm like, man, that looks like something I would really enjoy doing. And so that's when I kind of got the bug of I went into communications at NC State. I didn't really have an aspiration to be on the air or be in TV, but I felt like with a degree in communication, there are a lot of companies that need people to communicate, whether it's with their clients, whether it's with the public, whether it's internally with their employees. So I felt communication was a really big and broad major that could really help me be successful in whatever I wanted to do. But then once I got into it and started seeing some of the broadcast coverage and watching some of the videos that Jay Jennings used to put together, I'm like, you know what? I think I want to go into TV. I want to be a part of the media. And I started as a photographer and loved doing that. Would have been fine doing that. Didn't have aspirations to be on the air. But then it kind of morphed into, hey, I want to try being a reporter. I want to write. I want to do stories. And then eventually it led to an opportunity to be on the anchor desk with more responsibilities. And that was a load of fun, too. But again, learn as much as you can about what you want to do. And I tell people all the time, do as much as you can to make yourself valuable. And I think that's one of the things that I learned at NC State. The other thing I learned in the communications department, which is vastly underrated, has been for a long time, is be balanced, be fair, and be correct. Those are three things that I think anybody in the media should try to aim for. Treat people the right way, be fair, be balanced, be correct. And that's what I carry with me today.
Well, and talking about that career, I did want to ask you, because I don't think I've ever sat down and asked you this question, but what has been the most, first of all, I'll ask you the most memorable one, because I'm sure there's, you know, going to the Olympics and being able to cover obviously multiple Final Fours, all those different things. And I'm sure, you know, NC State fans probably don't want you to bring up, you know, maybe a Final Four run or something.
Exactly.
But I was going to leave it to you, your favorite, you know, moment covering sports in general, and then your favorite moment covering NC State as well.
Well, whether I got to cover something or not, being part of the 83 run as a student is probably, it's not a career highlight, it's a life highlight.
Yeah.
And so I put that at the top, getting to experience that. But I have been exposed to so many different things and multitude of experiences, going to the Final Fours and the Rio Olympics, that it just popped up this year. It's the 10-year anniversary of when we covered the Rio Olympics. I mean, the football team was supposed to play in Rio, and it was going to be the same the stadium that I covered a lot of track and field in 2016. But that, being in that environment where there is the Olympic spirit, there is, whether you, no matter what language you spoke, you know, the international nonverbal of a smile was seen everywhere. And I think that was one of the things that I thoroughly enjoyed. It was a ton of work. We worked for 4 straight weeks without a day off. That's not a complaint. That's just a fact. But we enjoyed it all of us. I think of the Final Fours, and, you know, what people don't understand about covering the Final Four is a lot of times, like when you're on the air, you don't see the end of the game. You're out on some scaffolding outside waiting to see what the outcome of the game is, because you've got a live shot to do. Yeah. So, you know, while the memories of the Final Fours are great and many in covering championships, you know, there weren't many that I got to cover that, you know, I was right there in the moment. The Leitner shot against Kentucky, I was there in Philadelphia right there in the moment. So that's a memorable thing. Being able to work in Cleveland for a few years when they had this high school kid in Akron named LeBron James was a career thing for me to do, because when he was a sophomore, the TV station I worked for, we did a documentary going from his football season. He was an all-state wide receiver all the way through his first state championship as a sophomore. We had access that no one else had. His mother, Gloria, was great to us. She allowed access that was no one else had. And this is before ESPN hopped on the LeBron bandwagon. So
yeah,
I still look at that stuff and I'm like, I can't believe I got to do that. And so those are the kind of things. And as I sit here at Carter-Finley Stadium, I can never not look at down at that end zone near the Murphy Center and not think about the 1986 Danny Peebles catch from Eric Kramer to beat South Carolina, the Hail Mary. That one, I was a young photographer, and thank goodness I was like, okay, there's only one thing they can do. They got to throw a Hail Mary. So I went to the back of the end zone. I always, when I shot games, I always tried to predict what I thought the play was going to be, and I would try to go to that area. And so I did, and Danny Peebles fell right at my feet. And that's something that I'll never forget that happened in 86. So ton of things I was tasked when I left REL to just the question that you asked me. And I said, I can give you a top 10, but I can't do one or two. And so it's a hard question to answer.
that means you've had a pretty long and really good career as well, which I think a lot of people would agree with. My last thing for you, just, you know, just your general excitement for taking on this new role, and what types of things are you looking forward to the most, to be able to continue to tell the story of NC State and, you know, be exactly what you asked Boo Corrigan to be for NC State.
I'm really excited, A, to be back on the sidelines, but the goals are twofold. Number one, don't get run over. And number two, don't ask Dave a bad question at halftime or in the post game. Those are the two things that are at the top of my list.
Sometimes it doesn't have to be a bad question.
No, you're exactly right. It can, look, the first radio show we had this year, I was talking to Dave about Spike Soles, and I didn't frame the question right. I talked mm-hmm. about his move from, you know, guard to center and whatever. And he goes, well, we really didn't move him because we recruited him to play center. And that was it. I'm like, okay, the follow-up question should have quickly been, okay, well, what is it about his makeup that makes him a center? Mm-hmm. And I just choked. And so that was a situation where that was totally my fault. So, yes, yeah, sometimes it doesn't have to be a bad question. It can just be framed the wrong way. And that's one of the things that I'll try not to do. But, yeah, seeing the game, communicating the game from the field is something that I'll take great joy in and great pride in and try to do the best that I can. I'm not taking over for Tony. I'm just the next in line because he was unique in the way he covered things from the sidelines, from the basketball analyst situation. And I'll be a little different, but also take what I've talked to Tony about and try to apply it to my skills. But just to also clarify, I am not the analyst for men's basketball.
We talked about it beforehand. I completely forgot to mention it. Yes. Yes. Was Chucky, right?
Yeah. That Chucky is still there. He is fine. He is great. I'm just doing football from the sideline and the pregame show.
Well, perfect. Jeff, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And I'm looking forward to listening to you as much as I can, because when I'm there at the games, a lot of times I do have the headphones on to kind of listen to what you guys are hearing and seeing on the sidelines as well. So I appreciate you taking the time for us.
You got it, Corey.
All right. Well, thank you so much to everybody for listening. We will talk to you guys again soon.